Welcome to Hair Blazers. This is the podcast where we empower you to disrupt the beauty industry, starting with your chair and your salon. You can focus on running your business and tune in here to find out how to keep it moving forward. My name is Naomi. I'm the marketing manager for the Aveda Institute Winnipeg and for the Verde Salon Group. And today we are joined by none other than Erin Kuhn. Erin serves as president and partner for Qunity and Qunity for Schools, which is the market leader for financial literacy and financial wellness, learning and development in the professional beauty industry. And she's the host of the new Money 02 podcast. Welcome, Erin.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course, we're super excited to have you. One thing that I love is that with Money 02, you've been describing yourself as somebody who's obsessed with money, but not like that. And I totally resonate with that because I am also somebody who is very kind of interested in the personal finance sphere. My background is actually in marketing and in finance, which definitely comes in handy when I'm building a budget and things like that. But it's also just kind of from a lifelong interest in the stories that we tell ourselves about money, I think is how you described it. And I love that. That's very, very salient to the industry today and to salons today and to stylists today. So I love all those things and I'm super excited to get into it. But first, I'd really love to hear more about you and about kind of your journey in the industry up until this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and what you said about being obsessed with money, but not like that. I think people who do have those feelings are people who have also had struggles, right? So I have certainly overcome my own struggles with finance and my own struggles with worrying about money and being stressed, you know, particularly in my early 20s, like so many stylists, especially when they're building. And I also have it in relation to being an entrepreneur and starting a young company and also those kind of pressures that I know many business owners, salon, spa, school owners, you know, so many can relate with those. So I certainly come to it with a sense of, hey, I've learned I'm not perfect, but I've also been there. And that's why I want people not to have to worry about money, right? You know, one of the things that I think about is life is crazy and hard enough. And if we can figure out the money component, then it makes life quite a bit easier, you know? And, you know, obviously there's always going to be challenges, but let's kind of mitigate the things that to the best extent possible, we can have control over. And the reality is we can have control over some of our money related decisions. But as it goes for my journey, I mean, I'm not a stylist. I'm not a salon owner, but I was raised by a salon owner. My business partner, who I know you've spoke to, Tom, he's our CEO of Qunity. He also happens to be my father. And I got into Qunity totally by accident, but I did grow up in the industry when he was co-owner of a multi-location salon chain. And so I remember being like 11 years old and folding towels in the break room and emptying all the color bins and, you know, setting up the Christmas packages when we do. So I was always kind of in the salons and I loved being in the salons. I loved receiving the benefits of getting access to, you know, salons and being able to get treatments and things like that. But I also just loved the energy and I loved, you know, and I guess for me, I always viewed salons as a business, you know what I mean? I always really viewed them as a business and I was raised to see the viability of these businesses. And so I think, anything we can do to help anyone in the industry, again, whether they're a business owner, a school owner, a salon owner, or a service provider, or a student, you know, entering into this industry, the more we can equip them with the financial components, the better they're going to be set up for success. So the one story I kind of will never forget was a program. I can't even remember the location. And I was just sitting through at that time, really just interning. And there was a businesswoman. I think she had 3 salon locations, 80 employees. And we were going through the numbers component in a very simple visual way. And this salon owner was maybe in her 60s. And she threw down the workbook, literally threw it down. And she had tears in her eyes. And she goes, "Why the hell didn't anyone tell me it could be this simple?" And she was almost like, so just because of years of going through the struggle. And she shared that she had major debt and the business was kind of rocky on ice. And when I watched the reaction of many of these business owners, and when I also sat through it from the lens of, hey, I was in college. Why didn't I learn about money in this type of way? Why didn't I learn about driving sales in this type of way? And Why didn't I learn about finance in this type of way? And so I think it really just seeing that individual's transformation and many more like that. I have so many other stories like that. And also just from a student perspective, like, why aren't we learning about this? Why isn't everybody learning about this? And most people learn about it. You know, I took an accounting class in college, and you, as you did too, right? In finance, it's boring and it's spreadsheet heavy, and it's not the way that many learners prefer to learn, which is through simple and visual and fun. And so that's really how I got involved in Qunity. And I've been here, I don't even know how many years since. And I took 1 year off and worked in corporate America just to kind of step away and build my skill set. But I really believe in what we do, and I see the changes pretty much daily. So
yeah, I think one of the things that I really admire is particularly your work in schools, because it makes sense, because for the most part, people are learning their personal finance skills from their family, and they're not necessarily learning it in high school or in university, or if they are learning it in university, they're learning it in like a accounting class balance sheet sort of way, which is, you know, needlessly complex. And because people don't really have a consistent place that they're learning about money, you get extreme variations in financial literacy. And that's a huge challenge once you get into the working world, once you're a stylist, once you're especially when you make the transition to a business owner, that has massive implications on your business. And, you know, if you're the business owner and that's something you're struggling with, it's for sure also impacting all of your employees. You know, it's like, this is something that has a ripple effect through everyone in your organization. So I know that this, like, your program is something we recently brought into our school. We're launching it like pretty much this month. So that's something that we're really excited to be able to provide, is like, you know, here's not only the basics of, you know, building a personal budget, knowing what you're earning, but also in the future, if you do want to open that salon, owning a salon is a completely different skill set than doing hair. And even like financial literacy for a stylist and financial literacy for an owner are two very different things.
1000%. I mean, it's so spot on. And I was recently, I'm on like my fourth time zone this past week. So I'm still gearing up, getting back to the swing of things. You're my first like major presentation, this week since I returned last night. But one of the things last week, I was with, three different school groups and really speaking to students. And it's always so fun when I get to go in the field, because I don't always get to do that anymore. And one of the things I tell students, because the reality is it is still finance, right? You know, bringing in finance, it is still finance and money or whatever you want to call it. But one of the things that I particularly like to tell students is this is about money. It's not about math, right? And I think that's a big shift, because one of the questions that we've asked for years since we started this program, by the way, to professionals and business owners, is, do you have money or math anxiety? Meaning specifically, do you feel a sense of fear, angst, or dread when even talking about the money component? For students, and I'm looking at a survey right now because I have it up, is we've had, I think, 4,000 participants to this date take this survey, all students in beauty and wellness programs. 68% say yes. So, you know, almost three-fourths of students state they have money anxiety. And I mean, I'll ask you, what do you think is the typical reaction that happens when somebody has anxiety about something? What's the first?
It's 100% avoidance behavior. If you're stressed out about something, if you feel that sense of dread, you are going to avoid it as much as possible. And putting your head in the sand is not an effective way to deal with your money.
Yeah, that's always what we hear. And, you know, sometimes students will be like, I sleep, I eat, I do other behaviors that I probably shouldn't say online. We've had some really interesting responses to that question. And the reality is most people avoid it. And now we have an industry. And what's also really interesting is we ask that same question to professionals. The percentage actually goes up to 69%. And it's always evolving because this is an ongoing survey, but really the numbers don't change from student to professional. We haven't redone this survey to owners, but the reality is, and then it becomes, when we're working with owners, more of a financial management type thing, financial management of a business. You're right. That's completely different than a personal, you know, your own personal financial household. It's very different skills, dealing with a P&L statement, dealing with expenses and overhead and payroll. And most owners in our Money SBO program fail a basic financial management test. They fail it. And so, you know, when we look from student to professional to owner, we have a huge ripple effect of people that have not gotten access to financial related training. And, you know, we also survey that. We ask how many of you have had any financial related education? And 76% of students say they have had zero financial education, which, you know, that's not necessarily hugely surprising for students, but for professionals, it's 69% have had zero financial related education. And I really believe you cannot change behaviors. You cannot change outcomes and circumstances of something that you don't even understand. And so a little bit of education goes a long way. And, you know, the lack of financial literacy, we also ask students to rate their own financial literacy. It's a 5 out of 10. For professionals, it's also a 5 out of 10. And I'm always struck by, because people will always ask or state, they're like, oh, 5 out of 10, that's not that bad. And I'm like, well, it's still an F. You know what I mean? You're still giving yourself an F on financial literacy. So the reality is we don't see a lot of changes from students to professionals without the intervention of a financial literacy program. And we really believe that the next generation of professionals getting this training can totally change the trajectory of the industry. And, you know, we talk about, as you had Tom on your podcast last week, if people haven't listened to that podcast, we talk about perception related issues. We talk about the reality of earnings and the average earnings that are published, and they're pretty grim. But the reality is we have to change that from systematically, right? From students to professionals to owners. And that really, I believe, involves embracing the financial side of things, because, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, but it's art and commerce, it's business and creative, it's all the things that when you merge together create a greater whole.
Absolutely. And if you can't get a hold of the, you know, when it comes down to it, it's money in, money out. And if you aren't able to kind of face that head on and understand what those numbers mean and understand what you're earning, this is such an incredible industry, because you can, as a stylist, as a business owner, you can easily do things that can bring you more income. You know, as a stylist, you can almost to the point of like essentially choose what you're earning, but you have to understand how to earn more in order to, and what you're currently earning in order to take the steps that will actually get you there.
Absolutely. Money in and money out, hugely important. I think another big component is money mindset. And I know that's super cliche, and it's like, you know, there's lots of Instagram and, you know, accounts that you can follow around this, but I really do believe it's true. And I really believe that we can't start with changing something unless you understand. If you hate or fear money, or if you think sales is a really dirty word and that's like you just want to be an artist and a creative, you can't ignore how that impacts the actions that you take at work every day, right? And that's part of the education around really understanding how all of those go together. And another thing that I think is really important when we talk about money in, and something that we're seeing in the industry, is really understanding preneurship. And that's a huge component when we talk about money in, because I always illustrate this. And when we ask students, do you want to be an entrepreneur when you leave and when you graduate school, a lot of people will raise their hands in surveys, but that's before you actually educate them on the facts, right? And so once we educate on the different realities of preneurship, and we kind of break it down into three of them, an entrepreneur, which is a business owner with a team, with employees, who takes on all the financial risk with the intention that they're going to move away from their craft, right? And they're going to train employees and have them do. So like you said, it's a totally different skill set. You're now running a business with the team. So that would be a salon owner, a school owner, et cetera. Then you have a solopreneur. A solopreneur is a business of one. Maybe they're working in a suite, they're doing it from home, God forbid, or wherever they're doing it. And that really, I think entrepreneur and solopreneur really get blended together in this industry, right? They kind of lump them together, but they're very, very different things. As a solopreneur, you have a ceiling, and there's this glamour thinking that you can work whenever you want, but that's not entirely true, especially when you're in building mode. And then lastly, there's an intrapreneur. And an intrapreneur is just a business within an existing business. And ultimately, we believe at Qunity, whichever one you want to become, that's great, as long as you enter into that pathway knowing the facts. And there's a lot of benefits to being an intrapreneur and to being able to work for the structure of an existing business. And like you said, to be able to show up and perform and really grow your sales without worrying about other kind of expenses. And so I think just really, again, I mean, I really believe that all solutions really start with education. And so if we can educate the industry better on money in, money out, and all of the things as it relates to money, people are going to be equipped to make better decisions for their professional careers, for their families, and for their financial lives as well.
Totally. And to your point, to, you know, money mindset is definitely something that plays a role. People's number one decision-making factor is generally the emotion, the underlying emotion that's there. So it impacts everything, and it absolutely impacts money. But one thing that you also mentioned was the Pro Beauty Compensation Study, which is fantastic. I personally loved that. I was so excited when I heard that project was happening. And it's really fantastic to see the results. But, you know, I would love to know why you chose to kind of continue that work with the Money O2 podcast specifically, and kind of that, that mode of delivering information.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, everybody, there's lots of podcasts these days. There's lots of ways to consume information. There's certainly no shortage of access to information, but why I wanted to do this was really, it kind of goes back to my own personal journey. I mean, when I was in my 20s, I was so broke. As I said, I was so stressed about money. And the way that I really began, and it was ironic because at the time that was when I was just starting with Qunity, and I was watching all these business owners have transformations and really helping them across the country. And this was before the school program. But I really, the way in which I started to change my own financial reality was to listening to other people transform theirs. And so it was listening. I'm such a sucker for before and afters, you know, whether anything it is, it's so inspiring. And sometimes to make a change, you have to believe that change is even possible for yourself. And so I wanted a way for people to listen to stories and not have to just go in and take a curriculum. It's there. All the information is there for people, right? They have all the tools, they have all the education in all of our curriculums. It's just a matter of doing it. And so, you know, one of the things that we've really studied at Qunity and what we've tried to do with our tools and education is move people from a state of knowing to doing. And it's the hardest thing to make people change, right? Is we all know these things, but why don't the majority of humans do them? And so that's kind of the missing link. And I really believe one big component of it is because they don't believe it's possible. And so doing the Money O2 podcast allows me to share people that someone might idolize. Someone might look at them and think they have it all figured out. And then they hear back and they're like, oh my God, they overcame that. They paid off $50,000 of debt. They almost went bankrupt. Like all these crazy things that, looking on the outside of things, people make assumptions that people have it all figured out. But it's also normalizing struggles with money because almost everybody has them. And so that was really why I started it, to just give another vehicle for people to believe that change is possible when it comes to finances.
Absolutely. And I think it's a really smart way of delivering information because this is such a people business. We're such a people industry. You know, it's like if you're a stylist, you're spending 6 to 8+ hours a day spending time with people, having conversations with people. So I love this method of delivering information through storytelling because, you know, it's like you get to have a salon owner sit in your chair for 30 minutes and tell you everything that you wish people would actually talk about money. So I love that. That was very cool to see. But I'd love to know, in your opinion, what are some of the ways that financial literacy actually costs salons?
Oh my gosh.
So many, all of them.
I mean, I love this question and I wish I could give you an answer like it costs the average salon owner $300,000 or whatever it is. We don't have data on that. That should be our next study that
one day.
We do, right? But I think, you know, you can look at some of the tangible and intangible ways, right? I think a tangible way is around staff. And I think lack of financial literacy, not only to the owner, but also lack of financial literacy of their staff. Because the reality is there's a labor shortage and people are making decisions and assumptions and going solo or leaving the industry or not driving sales potential to their full capability, which ultimately is revenue for the salon, because they don't understand money and they don't understand how money works. And I think that's a huge component. So missed revenue opportunities is number one. And I really think, again, that's just due to lack of understanding of or willingness to. And it's not due to lack of understanding, because I know salon owners educate their staff on that, but it might be the positioning of it to their staff, right? Of how they can increase their performance.
Well, one thing I would like to add to that as well is that, you know, if we're giving stylists this education from like the salon owner perspective, they would understand that actually, you know, if my salon is doing like a couple million dollars in sales every year, the majority of that is actually being paid out to staff. The majority of that is going to the stylists. And then a lot of the rest of that is going into, you know, stocking your retail shelves, keeping the lights on, all of the various costs associated with the business. You know, the average profit for a salon is like 3%. Like it's really, really marginal. So it's not like when you see a salon making X amount of dollars a year, that's all going into the owner's pocket. The majority of it isn't. The majority of it is going back to the staff and into the business.
Absolutely. And that's just also general business acumen, right? Understanding the cost of running an enterprise, the cost of running a business. And yeah, the last study we did was 2 to 5% profitability. And when we ask professionals that, we say, you know, on average, for every dollar that comes into the salon, how much do you think goes back to the owner? People say 80 cents, 50 cents. I mean, it's like, it's crazy. And then once we really educate on that reality, then the staff can really get bought in, not making assumptions of, you know, that the owner is making a gazillion dollars. This has always been a challenge with salon ownership and with business ownership in general, right? So I think that's a big component. I also think for owners who really don't understand the money in versus money out, I mean, you know, it depending on the day, depending on who I talk to, we have all these stories. And one is an owner that we're working with. She was negative 9% in profit just because she didn't know where her money was going. With a little bit of work and a little bit of support, she's at 9% profit, right? That money, that is a quantifiable difference in profitability that now ultimately, it certainly doesn't always mean cash, but it's now running the business on a profit. And so I also think, you know, the intangible. So I think number one is compensation for staff and not really explaining that and not having staff own and understand that, which also leads to missed revenue opportunities, which I think also goes down to the service provider. And then losing money from a salon owner standpoint, really not understanding their own money in versus money out. We see a lot of salons dramatically overpaying staff when, and then getting into a state of crisis mode, and then it's really hard to backtrack. So just not basing business decisions off of the finances. Typically we've seen it be an afterthought, and that's not for all businesses, certainly, right? There's a lot of businesses that don't operate like that, but I think the strong ones, and we saw it during COVID, do operate and put the finances because they know it's what creates an ultimately more sustainable business. And I think we've seen a lot of owners who were really great hairdressers who became salon owners and never really properly took the time to learn and take ownership that they now are running a business. And that means they're running a P&L. And so I think money in versus money out are kind of big components that salon owners might not really take ownership of or not take ownership of, but really embrace.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that understanding is really critical to being able to, you know, break out of that 2 to 5% that so many salons are stuck in. You kind of touched on this a little bit already, but there's a lot of ways that this impacts the industry, you know, broadly as well. So what are some of the reoccurring themes that you see when you do talk to all of these different salon owners, all these different stylists, all these different schools? What are some of the impacts that are being felt right now by the lack of literacy that exists?
I mean, I think probably the biggest thing that comes to mind is perception. I think this industry, when we talk about an entire industry, you know, if you think about all other industries, they have lobbyists that protect the PR and the image and perception of their industry. And we certainly, you know, we have some people lobbying because I was just doing it on the Hill last week, but not really. And so the perception of hairdressers and salon owners and spa owners and this industry altogether is largely negative. I mean, I hate to say that, but I know I'm not alone in people who have experienced that. I mean, when I'm at dinner parties and I say what I do, they're like, oh, you work with salons. It's like, yeah, they're businesses, you know? And it's just the perception that I not only feel, you know, from a just a feeling standpoint, but we also see the perception when we look online. We see low earnings, we see poverty level wages, we see work long hours with little time off. And it's just shocking to those of us within the industry because we know that that's not true. And if it is true, it doesn't have to be true, right? And so I think perception is one of the big things that comes to mind, the ripple effects. And I think also when we look at students, and it starts with the students and the next generation of beauty and wellness professionals, they're not getting proper education on how to understand the financial component of what it means to be a beauty and wellness professional. And so we're starting to change that. But I really think it's lack of education is what it boils down to the problem with, and lack of consistent education. And then ultimately the biggest ripple effect that I see is perception issues. And then ultimately kind of this migration to solopreneurship, which we see people, this trend of, you know, Tom always calls it, or I don't even remember who said it. I think it was Tom, the boss babe mentality, which is a lot of people seeing and really wanting to quote unquote be their own bosses, but not really understanding and not necessarily making that decision for the right reasons, not only the right reasons, but also without the full facts. And so I think also really we're seeing salons really struggle. Some are doing better than others, but salons are really, really struggling to stay afloat because they can't properly staff their businesses. And so there's a lot of impacts, and every industry is being impacted right now, right? The economy is crazy. People are very fearful. We're seeing mass layoffs, but I actually think to flip it, it's a huge positive. You know, we see Google just laying off over 10,000 workers. I think it was like a week and a half ago, and everyone freaking out about AI, right? Lawyers freaking out because AI can write contracts, doctors freaking out because they can provide diagnosis, all of these first choice careers. But we are looking at a career in an industry that you can't outsource to AI. I'm sure there'll be something, right? Like some creative way they can help make our jobs and lives easier, but you can't outsource the job that a hairdresser or a cosmetologist or a nail technician or a massage therapist or an esthetician or a makeup artist does. You just can't. And that is a really actually empowering place to be. And it's a really empowering, cool narrative for this industry.
Absolutely. Erin, you touched on this already, but what do you want salons, students, stylists to take away from the stories that you're telling?
I want them to believe that change is possible. I want them to believe that their current situation doesn't have to be their forever situation, because I certainly know it can feel like that. And for students, you know, also really recognizing, you know, that things take time, right? Like most people in their 20s struggle because they're trying to build a career and get on their feet, right? And so if you have the reality of the expectation that you're going to get out of school and make a crap ton of money right away in the first year, that's probably going to be a misalignment with expectations. But if you have the expectation of, hey, I'm in building mode. These are my 20s. I'm building my career. So let's focus on that and understand I'm going to eventually get to a place with my money in that it's not going to be so tight, because it might be tight for a little bit, right? Focusing on building your money in is a huge thing. And then also understanding that it's never too early or too late to start, I think is also really important. You know, I was with a school group last week, and there was an elderly woman in the group. And I could tell, you know, it made me sad because I could see that, and she shared that she had never planned. And now she's kind of in, you know, she's almost in her 80s, right? And that's a very scary place to be, but that shouldn't prevent starting the process now, right? Like the only time is the present moment to start. And so also I think helping people change their narrative about you have to be good at math to be good at money or whatever myths and traps that you believe, it's just not true. You know, it's just not true. And this is our lives. And so I just want people to get excited about the possibility that change is possible, whether it's listening to my podcast, going through our Money EDU or Money SBO curriculums or Money Pro. Those are great resources, but there's also a ton of free resources online. You don't have to pay for this stuff. This is an age in which the access to information is abundant. And so take advantage and start somewhere. And something that worked for me was, again, listening to stories and listening to people's transformations and seeing, hey, okay, I can relate to that. Change is possible. This doesn't have to be forever. And if you're in beauty and wellness, you can make a real good living in this career and you can have flexible hours that many career paths don't offer. And it's a really, really cool career and we should all be proud of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love all these stories you're telling. Definitely check out Money 02 if you have not. It's fabulous. But Erin, where are some of the other places people can find you?
Yeah. So the podcast Money 02, make sure it's with an O and not a zero. Otherwise, you won't find it. So you can search that on Apple or Spotify or any of those platforms. We also have an Instagram, Money 02 Pod. So you can find us there. If you're with schools, I would say follow us at CUNITY for Schools. And then also kind of our overarching all things CUNITY, where we post new podcast episodes, things about schools, is on our CUNITY Inc. page. And that's where salon owners, leaders, professionals will also want to go. And that's at CUNITY Inc. on Instagram. And you can take a look at us there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you leave us a review, share with your team, and tune in next time.